The AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by IBM Watson, combining AI with Internet of Things data to help growers increase yields, improve quality, and drive sustainability. Cool, wet weather has resulted in one of the, if not the, slowest start for the corn crop ever. That's left a huge question mark over the yield potential and even the quality potential for the corn crop. So we'll talk to a couple of guys that are searching for those answers this morning.
Live from Sparkle City, USA, via Farm Journal broadcast, this is AgriTalk. This morning, we'll talk with Don Wick from the Red River Farm Network and Tommy Grassafi from Advanced Trading. Then Randy Dickhoot from Farmers National Company. And right after the news, the ladies are lined up for Mike Opperman from Farm Journal's Milk. Thanks for tuning in, Planet Earth. I'm handsome newsman Davis Michelson, and now the host of AgriTalk, Chip Lorre.
All right. Thank you so much, Davis. It's good to see you.
Yeah.
You know, we talked yesterday morning with Kirk Hands, BAMWX.com. And the bottom line there was that the word scattered would be used a lot over the next 10 days to describe the rainfall.
Yep.
Well, it is scattered.
Mm-hmm.
And unfortunately, some people have to be under those scattered showers.
Yeah.
And they're falling in northeast Iowa again, east central Iowa, over into Illinois.
Yep.
If you've managed to not catch one.
Yeah.
It's a pretty nice day out there.
Yeah, really. Well, yeah. And even if the sun is shining, an example.
Yeah.
The tiny blue Enigma was facing a town just a little ways north of here.
Right.
On our way to the game, the sun was shining. It looked beautiful.
Right.
But it was sprinkling.
Yeah.
You know, I guess that's part of the scattered nature of these showers.
That is exactly right. They can pop up anywhere, anytime.
Yep.
And if you get caught underneath one, it's not going to be any fun.
Yep.
It's not going to be fun. So, anyway, the grain markets, they were higher in the overnight session. They backed off the highs some.
Okay.
Corn is trading just slightly higher now in the nearby contracts. Soybeans have moved to the downside. Winter wheat futures have moved to the downside. But we do have a little bit of strength going in the cattle market and the lean hog market. I haven't been able to say that for a while.
Yeah.
You know, after $6.50 down in 2 days.
It's about time.
Yeah, it's about time we get a little bit of short covering going in here. And feeder cattle market right now is under a little bit of pressure. So, yeah, we've got a great show. We've got Hall of Fame.
We're jam-packed.
Hall of Fame, farm broadcaster Don Wick is coming up in the next segment. I can't wait to talk to Don.
Yeah.
And Tommy Grassafi. Mm-hmm. Tommy and Don are out on the road in the Eastern Corn Belt.
Yep.
Just checking things out.
Boots on the ground, baby.
Yep. Hashtag Boots19 on Twitter.
Mm-hmm.
And they're out there just taking a look. We're going to get a report from what they are not only seeing, but I know that Don is collecting all kinds of conversations with farmers out there. So we'll find out what Don is also hearing from those farmers.
We've heard an awful lot about what the Eastern Belt looks like. I haven't been over there, but it doesn't sound like it's the best this year.
No, it is not. It is not. All right. Let's go ahead and get into the news.
Sure thing. Well, ahead of this week's meeting between Presidents Trump and Xi Jinping, trade officials from the U.S. and China have agreed to resume trade talks during a phone call yesterday. China's state news agency reported, quote, according to the instructions from the phone conversations of leaders of both countries, both sides exchanged views on economic and trade issues. Both sides agreed to continue communication. Now, Chip, while that news is encouraging, a wide chasm remains between the two nations on trade. The Trump administration says it will continue to push for reforms on intellectual property, among several other contentious issues, including economic reforms in China. Now, another Chinese news source characterized the state of relations between the U.S. and China as not good, saying, quote, what I have learned about China's stance now is holding constructive and positive attitudes toward upcoming China-U.S. summit, but fully preparing for its failure and an escalating trade war.
Yeah, and right now you've got President Trump basically saying, listen, I'm happy with either outcome.
Right.
Let's just put a wrap to it and move on.
Right. On a related note, shipping giant FedEx has filed a suit against the U.S. Commerce Department accusing the Trump administration of enacting burdensome export restrictions. This after a Huawei phone was found in a package and returned to its sender in Britain by FedEx, raising concerns China may blacklist FedEx.
Wow.
Now, while at the G20 summit in Osaka, Japan this week, President Trump is scheduled to meet with leaders from Australia, Japan, India, Germany, Russia, Saudi Arabia, and Turkey. A source noted, quote, "We'll be spending a significant amount of time talking about policies that work, including deregulation, tax reform, investment agendas, innovation, and economic opportunities for all."
Yeah, he's got a full dance card, doesn't he?
He really does, dude. Big couple of days there at the G20. The president has also called on Asian nations to assist in protecting the Strait of Hormuz, questioning the logic of the United States protecting foreign vessels without compensation. Trump noted the U.S. oil boom has mitigated import demand for crude oil, suggesting that should lead to a diminished level of responsibility for the United States in the region. I would say, yeah, but aren't we making light crudes over here? And we still need a certain amount of heavy crudes that come out of the Middle East.
Yeah. Yeah. As far as I understand the situation, yes.
Yeah. Well, the president has tightened sanctions on Iran after perceived acts of aggression around the Persian Gulf. In response, Iran's Ayatollah expressed defiance, saying the fresh sanctions will not force the country to negotiate or capitulate. Actually, that kind of sounds like old Cassius Clay, doesn't it?
Yeah.
No capitulation. No negotiation. The Ayatollah went on to question President Trump's mental capacity.
Yes,
this is getting ugly.
It is. It is. And when you start making the personal attacks, that's when you better be air aware.
Yes. And finally, the House Ways and Means Committee will meet today to discuss labor reforms proposed by House Democrats in regards to the U.S.-Mexico-Canada agreement. Democrat members of the panel are concerned the language in the proposed USMCA is inadequate for enforcing labor reforms, suggesting new and creative monitoring and enforcement tools be included in the measure.
All right. Thank you very much, David.
You betcha.
Let's bring in Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. How are you today, Mike?
Hey, I'm good, Chip. How are you doing?
I'm okay. But every time I read another update from you or from wherever about what's going on at Fair Oaks, it just leaves me a little more disgusted with everything.
Yeah, I know. The latest news that has come out, you may have seen recently, is that the activist group, or the person that was doing the undercover video, actually may have coerced one of the people that was shot in the video to, you know, perform harm on some of the calves and the cows that were shot in the video. This came out. So authorities apprehended a couple of suspects, and a third party witness came forward and corroborated some of the allegations made by one of the suspects that one of the activist employees did, in fact, coerce the behavior of some of the people that were in the video. So that's just not good, as you know, they say. So,
So if we're looking for a guilty party in this, the activist group has to be on that list.
Well, we do, and we have, and there's some, with the dairies in Florida that were part of the undercover investigation over a year and a half ago. Same group did the activist video there, and there were some allegations. None of them were actually. You know, confounded, but some allegations that they coerced some of that activity down there too. So it just goes to show you that, you know, the activist groups have an ulterior motive, and sometimes it's not actually the best interest of the animals.
So most times it is not. 20 right. seconds. How's Fair Oaks dealing with it? Is they doing okay?
They're doing all right. You know, there were some grocery stores that took Fairlife off the shelves. It's back in a lot of those places. So they're coming through it, but it's a process, that's for sure.
Yep. I'll tell you this. I'm supporting them more than what I did before, Mike.
Mm-hmm. Because I am too.
I'm actually, you know, I used to just buy a bottle of milk at Quickstar or whatever. I go for the Fairlife now.
I do too.
I think you got to. All right,
and
Mike. Thanks, buddy. Yep, we'll talk to you next week. That is Mike Opperman, editor of Farm Journal's Milk. We've got Don Wick and Tommy Grisafi up next. Boots 19. With recent advancements in technology and more usable data being created than ever before, the future is bright for agriculture. The IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture collects hyperlocal Internet of Things data to create an electronic field record that is deliverable on a scalable, security-rich cloud platform. The solution applies AI and predictive analytics to this data to generate actionable, field-specific insights that food companies, grain processors, produce distributors, and farmers can use to help improve crop management. At IBM, we help agribusinesses accelerate their journey to cloud and transform into cognitive enterprises by combining Watson AI with accurate weather and farm data to help growers around the world make better decisions about pre-season planning, plowing, planting, spraying, and harvesting. To learn more, visit ibm.biz/agriculture.
Built over generations, the dairy is what gets you up in the morning and sometimes keeps you up at night. To say you're invested is an understatement. Merck Animal Health Brands have a 50-year history of providing the products dairy herds need to stay healthy. With innovation, passion, and integrity, we'll do what's right for your operation and for you. This is why Merck Animal Health works. Visit MAHcattle.com to see how Merck Animal Health can work for you.
Not in the market for a new planter, but looking to get better performance next season? Bring your trusted John Deere planter up to speed with our ExactEmerge upgrade kit. Hit the ground running without compromising singulation, population, spacing, or uniform depth. And now through July 15th, you can save 12% off the ExactEmerge and individual row hydraulic downforce upgrade kits. Visit your John Deere dealer today.
Is your post office grain protected from the ravaging effects of stored grain insects? For pennies per bushel, operators can fight insects in stored grains. Grain protectants from Central Life Sciences, such as Diacon IGR, Sentinel EC Insecticide, or Diacon IGR Plus, can help give you the long-term control of an insect growth regulator and the knockdown power of a broad-spectrum insecticide. Keep grain clean with grain protectants from Central Life Sciences. For more information, contact your local dealer or visit bugfreegrains.com.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best corn yield ever. But disease can stand in the way, like gray leaf spot, northern corn leaf blight, anthracnose leaf blight, and southern rust. New Dilaro fungicide can stop them. Two different modes of action work on the diseases for the entire spray interval, delivering best-in-class dual mode of action residual efficacy for extended performance. It's the help you need for personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
They're not the type to ask for help, the ones who beat the sun to their workday. But after floods erased generations of farmland, livestock, and crops, that resolve was shaken. It's time to show our farmers and ranchers that when waters rise, so do good people. Maybe they won't ask for help, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't answer. Donate to our farmers and ranchers at staystrongnebraska.com.
3, 2, 1. Oh no. Which button am I?
When every second counts, you can't wing it.
Guys, a little help up here?
In a home fire, you may have less than 2 minutes to get out. So make a family home fire escape plan. Then practice home fire drills at least twice a year so everyone knows what to do when they hear. Prepare your family at ready.gov/firedrill. Brought to you by FEMA, the Ad Council, and
the IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture, helping to feed a hungry world with the power of AI. And welcome back to AT. This is AgriTalk. I'm your host, Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me.
DM standing by.
There you go. in SC.
Yes. Yes.
Yes. Yes. All right. The conversation about just how many acres are going to be planted, have been planted, might still be planted in the Eastern Corn Belt has been quite the conversation this
yes,
year.
Yes.
And we've on the line, we've got a couple of guys that just decided to throw themselves right into the middle of the conversation. Mm-hmm. And I love it.
Yeah.
Hats off to them. Tommy Grisafi, Advanced Trading. Tommy, how are you this morning?
I'm doing well. How are you, Chip? David?
I'm doing real well, real well. And Hall of Fame farm broadcaster Don Wick from the Red River Farm Network. Don, thanks for making time. I know you guys are busy out there on the road.
Appreciate the chance to visit with you, Chip.
Yeah. Okay. Now, I want to say this, and I'm going to say it again before we get to the end of the segment. If you're on Twitter and you want to follow what Tommy and Don are discovering out there on the road, make sure that you follow hashtag Boots19, okay? Hashtag Boots19. Tommy, why? Why throw yourself into this?
Well, Don Wick and I do this show on Mondays called What's Hot, What's Not. He just calls me and we talk about the three hottest things going on in the markets and the three not. And a week ago Monday, he said, hey, how bad's Indiana, Illinois, and Ohio? Yeah. And I said, why don't you jump on a plane and come see it? I said, you wouldn't believe me. You won't believe me until you see it. I said, I just can't explain it. It's just so inconsistent. And so, and I double dog dared Don, and, you know, he's a stud. And so next thing you know, I'm picking him up in the rain on Monday, and we're out running around. And I really, Chip, for my own, for our customers, for Ryan Fogle and I and Advanced Trading, but really for the Northern Plains customers who kind of have a better stand than most people in the country.
Sure.
Like North Dakota got it planted and it rained a few times. Things look pretty good.
Yep.
I was like, who could tell them how bad it is? You know, because they're 850 miles. We just pulled in the Beck's parking lot, Chip. You know where that is.
Yep.
They're 850 miles from here. Who's going to tell them the story? And I figure, what better guy than Don Wick?
Yeah, good, good. Don, 2013, we dealt with it in northern Iowa, southern Minnesota. High count on prevent plant acres in 2013. I know that you saw that, what that looked like. How does it look in the Eastern Belt compared to what we had in our area here in northern Iowa back in 2013?
Well, I guess I would say traveling through north central Illinois, I didn't really see as much PP in that particular area, or unplanted ground, is what I probably expected. But as we moved into Indiana today, and say between that Frankfort and Tipton area, we've certainly seen a lot more areas that have had some challenge trying to get a crop in the ground.
So were you surprised by how many acres were planted in Illinois? Because I don't think you're alone, Don. I think a lot of people have been surprised by just how many acres actually got planted in Illinois.
The crop may be planted is the big question, yep, though, is the maturity of that crop. It's, you know, it should be shoulder high at this point, and most of it didn't come up past my boots. So we're going to need all of the summer and a good long fall to make that crop into work.
Absolutely. That's one thing that's really tough for the market to understand, isn't it, Tommy? Because they see that 57% good to excellent and say, okay, well, half of it out there is at least good. And very small percentage of it, like 12 or 13% of it, I think it's 12%, is poor to very poor, according to USDA's numbers yesterday. They think, they see those numbers, a lot of people see those numbers and think that everything's fine out there.
Well, yeah, what you think and what we're going to end up with in the fall might be two different things. And I'll tell you a couple things. These would be questions when you talk to farmers off the record. I don't think any farmer's going to tell you or Don Wick that they're under-fertilizing their crop. But when you talk about a farmer that planted on June 10th, and he normally fertilizes for 220 bushel, and there's a chance we could be $5 corn, maybe higher at the fall price, and he's got great insurance. You know, I'll ask you, Chip, I learned so much from you going on the first crop tour. And what's the farmer's motivation to go try to grow big bushels? There could be a reason to, and there could be a reason not to. And that's like the little hidden secret about this crop.
Yeah. Yeah, we had Ben Renchi on the Farmer Forum. I think it was just last week, right?
Yep.
And, Tommy, this is one thing that Ben brought up, is just how hard are guys going to work on a crop that you look at it and visually you know that you're a month behind. You look at it and visually you know that crop does not have the potential that last year's crop did. Do you put the same effort into growing that crop this year as you did a year ago? And I think the answer in a lot of cases is going to be no. Don, I know you've been talking with farmers out there. What are they saying? Are they putting everything into it that they can?
Well, and also keep in mind, a lot of those farmers were forced to early up on the maturity. So in an area where you might be planting 114-day corn, you went to a 96-day corn. We talked to some folks that they had to go to Minnesota, Illinois farmers that had to go to Minnesota to get seed this spring. That's going to cut into the production, obviously, this this fall as well. But the answer to your question is, what's the motivation to add more fertilizer to the mix when you're looking at a crop that's 3 inches tall?
Yeah, yeah, that's exactly right. And Tommy, throw on top of it, you know, you look at what has happened to the price already, and we saw a really nice move to the upside. The problem is people are looking at it and saying, okay, this is a supply-driven issue, but on the demand side, we were moving demand for corn to South America. And I mean, in some cases, we were taking it away from Iowa and moving it to Brazil or Argentina. So we can't forget about the impact on the demand side of it as well. And if we do lose demand, it's going to make it that much more difficult to push prices to the upside.
Well, you know, one of the first headlines when we're driving today was a Reuters article saying, just throw out a number, 2.4 million more hogs culled in Vietnam or something. And so, I mean, every day that they're killing these hogs, it's just less demand. Could you imagine ship flipping it that if what would it look like if we had the health of the hog herd and we were getting along with China? What price would soybeans be today? I imagine they'd be in the upper 10s, maybe 11. And in a strange way, I still think we have that potential. What if I told you that the biggest hidden secret, and I know you know this already, you talked to enough people, that the story isn't the corn crop anymore, that it's really the beans? We saw so many fields of beans that just, when we were digging them up, I mean, they're just now emerging. And it's going to be July 1st this weekend.
Yeah.
First longest day of summer is gone. I mean, it's crazy.
Yeah, well, yeah, they're going to come up out of the ground flowering. I mean, that's how they work. That's how they work. But, you know, I remember the year that I remember most clearly on a late bean crop was 1996. We were in the area that you're in right now. I mean, the exact area that you're in right now.
We're in Atlanta, Indiana, Beck's Hybrids, yep.
Yep. And 1996, we saw a lot of plants that had two or three blooms and maybe a pod or two in the third week of August. Well, it didn't frost until Thanksgiving, and they made 35 bushel beans. But yeah, there's no guarantee that that's going to happen this year. Don, just give me your overall impression of what you've seen so far. Put it into your words.
Well, again, the maturity of the crop, I think, is I would say is the biggest issue. There's certainly, particularly as we moved into Indiana, some challenges with some PP acreage didn't get planted. But to me, it's the maturity of this crop. One of the questions I also think is, when you look on the demand side, are these ethanol plants going to have enough to keep this grind going as we move forward, especially as we move into E15 and some of those kind of things as well? So those are a lot of the factors we're going to be watching here.
Yeah, you know, we talk about E15, we talk about the SREs, we talked about this on Friday. Politically, is it the right thing to be pushing for at a time when we could be looking at, you know, we're on the edge of a catastrophe with this corn crop and maybe drawing our reliability as a supplier in the energy market into question, and we don't want to be doing that. Tommy, what's the message from you for everybody?
Well, you're going to have to, you know, the 12 billion that is grown, or 12.5 or 13 or 11.5, you know, it's still going to need to be sold. So we've talked a lot the last few days, Ryan Fogel and I, and farmers have quit selling. They won't sell. And as you know, and I know, I watched Minneapolis wheat go from 5 to 25. $25 a bushel wasn't high enough to get wheat out of the farmer's hand, because you know why, Chip? It was going to 30. So I got a horrible feeling, however high we go, farmers won't sell it. They're locked and loaded now. They're going to ride this out. I think they'll ride it up, and I think they'll ride it down, and that breaks my heart.
Guys, thank you so much for making the time for us today. Travel safe. Don, we'll talk with you again soon. I know we'll be talking during the third week of August.
You got it, Jeff. Thanks.
All right. That
thank
is Don
guys.
Wick,
thanks,
the Red River Farm Network, and Tommy Grisafi, Advanced Trading. Don't forget, if you want to follow what these guys are doing on Twitter, hashtag Boots19. All right, we're going to talk land values when we come back.
Let's do that.
Farmers National up next on AgriTalk.
This is Dave Robbins reporting from what can only be described as a cornfield under attack. With me is Jim Stafford, a local corn grower. Jim, what's happening here?
Mites, banks, two-spotted and carmine, you name it. This corn is under attack.
What are the plans, if any, to deal with this serious situation?
Well, we're not going to stand for it. We're going to fight the mite.
How?
ZLSC Miticide. Just one application by Grounder Air gives long-lasting mite control. Now that field corn, popcorn, corn for seed, and corn grown for silage are all labeled, mites don't stand a chance.
But what about their eggs?
ZLSC affects mites in all stages, even eggs.
What kind of timetable are we talking about?
ZLSC reaches mites under the leaf where they feed and hide with translaminar activity. For long-lasting protection after a single application, apply ZLSC at early threshold or as a preventative treatment.
ZLSC. It lasts so mites can't. Contact your local Valent representative or Valent authorized retailer for more information. Always read and follow label instructions.
Time for Markets Now with the experts from Pro Farmer.
Joining us now is Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady. Brian, we traded higher in the overnight, kind of set back a little bit, but they're trying to stay on the plus side.
Trying, that's probably the right word, Chip. I think we saw the reduction in or the decline in crop condition ratings for corn. 3 points, so a little bit more than anticipated there. Gave us a boost overnight, but, you know, now we're looking at the funds pretty heavily long. We've got USDA's reports coming up on Friday. Big numbers there, the acreage and the quarterly grain stocks, with acreage being the focal point. Probably just not willing to add a whole lot to their length at this point in time.
Exactly. And this wheat market was trading, it was 5-6 higher. In the overnight, and here we are back at steady.
Yeah, kind of the struggle wagon there with some of the stuff, but just need to find a spark in that market and get some leadership there. I think that right now everybody's kind of looking to corn for leadership, and wheat included in that.
All right. You know, I'm hesitant to even mention it, but hogs are trading higher.
They are, yeah. Quietly, let's get through this so it's still accurate, but... no corrective buying in there. You know, the washout yesterday that we had into the close, they need some corrective trade. But we're still seeing the cash market slide. I think the average price was down 34 cents yesterday. So we need to see the strength in the cash market come around before the buyers come back to the futures in mass.
Yeah, no question about it. Now, when we saw corn pull back from the session highs, we saw feeder cattle pull up from the session lows.
Very tied to each other. Yeah. Right now. I mean, it's impossible to separate them, and we've gotten to that point.
Yeah, and live cattle trade, a little bit higher today, but we're going to be watching what's going on in that cash market very closely.
Definitely down $3 again last week in cash.
Yeah, no good. All right, Brian Grady and Jeff Wilson from Pro Farmer are going to be on with me this afternoon. Come back for that.
This is Brian Grady, Pro Farmer editor and AgriTalk market analyst, inviting you to get more insight on today's market movers and what to watch tomorrow with Pro Farmer. When you visit profarmer.com/radio, we'll give you 1 month of premium analysis and advice absolutely free. You'll get the perfect blend of the marketing and policy information you need for your farming operation without feeling overwhelmed. Plus, we'll text you when breaking market advice is issued so you never miss a marketing opportunity. Visit profarmer.com/radio to start today. Unbiased and free of advertisements, you'll get our detailed, time-tested advice for cash marketers and futures and options users, along with our premium analysis to give you the information that you need. Visit profarmer.com/radio right now to start your free month. It's fast and easy to start, and there's no long-term commitment.
Opinions expressed on AgriTalk do not necessarily reflect the views of Farm Journal Broadcasting, affiliate stations, or sponsors.
New Dallaro fungicide for corn and soybeans can help you achieve personal best yields.
All right, welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. Those guys over there, they're going to be covering a lot of miles. I'm talking about Tommy Grisafi, mm-hmm. Advanced Trading, and Don Wick from Red River Farm Network. They're going to cover a lot of miles.
Yep.
They're going to see an unbelievable amount of variability.
Mm-hmm.
And all that does is make me lose sleep at night when I'm thinking about the 2019 Pro Farmer Midwest Crop Tour.
Well, and this is the perfect dynamic duo to go out there and take a look. Tommy with the market and the ideas on that. And then, of course, Don Wick. What a pro.
Exactly. Exactly. Thanks Tommy and Don for calling in. I'm Chip Flory.
Yeah.
And I've got, let me reintroduce Davis Michelson right now.
Okay.
I've got Davis Michelson, the editor of Landowner Newsletter,
Oh, yeah.
with me.
Yeah.
So why don't you take it?
Well, yeah. We've got, we're, We're pleased to welcome Randy Dickhoot from Farmers National Company. Randy, thanks for joining us today on AgriTalk. How you doing?
I'm doing fine.
Good.
Thank you.
Good. Now let's jump right in. I've been reading your stuff. You wrote recently that Farmers National has seen a rise in financially stressed producers selling acres. But from how I read it, those sales have been more to sort of tighten up the books rather than panic sales. Am I reading this right, that this might actually indicate some good, solid financial thinking on the part of these sellers?
Yes. What's happening now as opposed to what happened in the 1980s, that, producers are very professional, very looking at it as a business. And, if they can... getting that working capital's declining and a little more financial stress than there was a few years ago, they're deciding that, I might want to sell off that last 80 acres I bought or something that's further away or not quite as good a quality and just get myself in better financial shape. So I think they're wisely looking at those options to help their business along.
Mm-hmm. 1031 exchanges keep kind of popping up as well, it seems like.
They do. For the investor, we handle quite a few of those where it's individuals that sold some type of rental real estate property. It may not have been a farm, or they're trading farms from different states and buying in a different state after that. Right. And so they're using that 1031. So it's a very good option for a landowner.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Randy, Chip Flory here. Selling off an 80 to firm up the financial sheets. Mm-hmm. It's been a while since we've seen something like this happen, hasn't it?
It has. Yeah. Again, in the 1980s was different because of the high interest rates, high inflation, land values just dropped like a rock, and there weren't many options. And so a lot of times, the books were closed on their business, right. and that was it. Today is a lot different because there's a lot of equity. These land values are still historically high and remaining fairly stable, and it gives a good solid base for agriculture and for producers to work from, and that's an advantage this time around.
Exactly.
Mm-hmm. Randy, this just kind of came to me over the last couple of minutes as I was thinking about talking with you. But can you talk just a little bit? Is there an impact notable on land values moving forward from taking prevent plant on certain amounts of acres? What does that do for a landowner?
That's a good question.
It's a little out of left field. I'm sorry.
those rules, still being formulated somewhat, and people have, I think landowners in a crop share situation and their tenants and producers have definitely struggled with making what is the right decision, not knowing exactly how everything's going to be administered. But going forward, for instance, a little bit different here, where land has actually been flooded. Whether it's a small river or Mississippi or Missouri river bottoms, if that water came up and is going down, in the past haven't seen a lot of long-term effect on land values. But if it's on one of those unfortunate areas that it dumped debris and sand and silt on it and it's got acres of that or it's cut out, definitely has an effect on that land value in the near term and longer term.
Right, it's kind of like when you're going out looking to buy a used car.
Yeah,
you want to make sure it doesn't have any flood damage on it. I guess it'd be a similar situation for land.
That's right, and we've seen maybe a few more here in Nebraska, eastern Nebraska, some very historic flooding. But will it happen again, and when? Mm-hmm. And so that comes into the mind, and I think it does affect value as it makes that buyer just even more cautious than they are right now.
Right? Yeah, no doubt about it. Randy, I saw the latest on Iowa rental rates. And I live in Bremer County, and Bremer County was right up there at the top of the list, I believe.
He's got to toot his horn a little bit here.
Well, it is God's country, Randy.
Understand.
Yeah. But the rental rates have backed off from the levels that we saw 5-6 years ago. Are we nearing a low?
You know, they backed off, but they've been very kind of slow and sticky to do that overall.
Yeah.
If you look at the market and, you know, the number of reasons for that, there's still competition by farmers to rent additional land in most areas, especially good quality land. The lower quality, harder to farm, not as efficient, lower PI, you know, that's not in demand as much. But the good quality definitely is. And, you know, with landowners still have their expenses. In some states, as the property taxes are yep. higher than others, that makes a landowner hesitant to drop the rents too. So kind of a combination of supply and demand.
Yeah, yeah. From your comments, Randy, I would take it that the spread between the high-quality ground and the lower-quality ground on rental rates, is it getting wider?
It's getting a little bit wider, you know,
yeah.
and part of that's regional based, you know, where in good prices and some good years, those rental rates increased probably more accordingly, and now they've dropped more accordingly. But within a county, region, or something, that good quality will still kind of surprise you sometimes what it'll rent for.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Mm-hmm.
Yep.
Can you give us a little insight on debt-to-asset ratios that you've observed just recently, and maybe how that compares historically?
Yeah. Historically, we're still on the low end of that. If you look at the charts and the data from USDA and, you know, other sources, it's definitely edging up and, you know, pretty sharp angle the last couple years. But it's still agriculture on the whole is in solid financial condition. And if, for instance, your state of Iowa, I think it was Iowa State, had 82% of the farmland had no debt against it.
Right.
So you take landowners, inheritors, but retired farmers have, you know, worked hard and paid for it over the years, as opposed to the smaller amount that's being bought with debt. But what happens, it's still a small number of individuals in the financial stress that create the issues and problems, whether that's for the lenders and loan delinquencies or so forth. You know, bankruptcies have edged up in the Midwest, but it's nowhere near what it was in the 1980s. Of course, there are fewer farmers and producers, but still, they haven't edged up. So debt to asset, you know, for the individual, extremely important and could be a problem. Overall, agriculture still fairly good shape.
When you're talking about a situation, however, like 82% of the land in Iowa being owned outright, that's a worm that eventually will turn, won't it? If we're talking about retirees, if we're talking about you know, people kind of at the end of their land ownership, I don't know
life.
How to say it delicately. But somebody's going to need to step in and purchase that land and operate on it. Are we kind of set up for maybe some financial peril ahead?
That's an interesting thought. I've looked at that and thought about it for a fair amount. As that generational transfer of wealth, the 80 and 90-year-olds happening all over the country, not just agriculture, are passing away, and their children, baby boomers, 50s and 60s are inheriting it. And with farms, you know, normally farmers, even when they retire, don't sell. Ranchers, when they retire, may sell. Different economic dynamics there a little bit. But farmers don't usually sell. They'll keep it, rent it. These are for tax reasons, you know, the capital gains and so forth. So tax reasons dictate that. Secondly, it's a farm legacy. Third, you know, farmland's good investment long term. We are seeing is a few more of the inheritors, you know, that the land's been passed down from non-farming members to the next generation of non-farming members. And a few more of those are thinking about selling as those family units with the ownership get larger, seeing a few more of them just decide to sell it instead of keeping it. And that's where, you know, we're starting to see a little more on the sale side. It's not large. I don't think it will get large, but there's a little more interest in doing that. The question you ask ultimately is, will there be enough capital, enough buying interest out there to buy that? And with farmers buying, you know, 60 to 80% of the farmland that comes up for sale, they're the predominant buyer. There are investors that continue to have interest, and that's increasing somewhat. So I think it'll work out, but yeah, I look down 20 years down the road with retirements and generational transfer, and there is a question mark.
Absolutely. Randy, thank you so much for making the time for us.
You bet. Appreciate it.
You bet. That is Randy Dickhoot. He is the Senior Vice President of Real Estate Operations for Farmers National Company. All right, Davis, what do you say we wrap this up when we come back?
Let's talk it out.
All right, let's do that.
Save time and capitalize on market opportunities with Pro Farmer's Daily Advice Monitor. Whether on your desktop or on your phone, visit tryprofarmer.com and get a generous 1 month free trial. Pro Farmer only focuses on the news that impacts the market, so you won't scroll through pages of articles to find what's really impacting your business. Plus, get full access to cash bids, charting tools, and more. Visit tryprofarmer.com right now. That's tryprofarmer.com.
Hi, I'm Ag Day host Clinton Griffiths, and I invite you to join me each morning as we cover the nation's food system, from fields of green to orchards of orange and livestock everywhere in between. America runs on agriculture, and here at Ag Day, agriculture is what we do best. Listen as our analysts track the markets, learn about innovations in technology and sustainability, and live the country lifestyle through the eyes of rural America. Join me, Clinton Griffiths, for Ag Day, the country experience.
I'm Andrew McRae, your host for Farming the Countryside. We're talking about issues, tips, and trends affecting rural and agricultural America.
Then it was a burden on the local office. Essentially, you just have our county right now, or PLC.
On each show, I talk with guests who provide the latest info on important topics and the challenges and successes on their own operations.
We had an open house and invited the entire community. It was a huge event. We had about 750 people show up.
The Farming the Countryside podcast is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
They're not the type to ask for help, the ones who beat the sun to their workday. But after floods erase generations of farmland, livestock, and crops, that resolve was shaken. It's time to show our farmers and ranchers that when waters rise, so do good people. Maybe they won't ask for help, but that doesn't mean we shouldn't answer. Donate to our farmers and ranchers at staystrongnebraska.com.
Joining us now is Darren Strauss. He is at Majestic Crossing Dairies in Wisconsin. Darren, tell us about Majestic Crossings and what your responsibilities are.
Majestic Crossing Dairy is a home of 2,000 cow dairies located in Sheboygan Falls, Wisconsin. We currently milk on two locations. We have a 900 cow robotic dairy, and then we milk about 1,100 cows through a conventional parallel parlor as well. Like most families in the Midwest, started with, you know, grandfather and father and everything, and has grown through the last number of years through through different generations and expansions, and has got us to the current level of about 2,000 cows right now. I basically manage the cows and people. Pretty much the bulk of it all is if it breathes, it pretty much goes through me, whether it's cows or the people.
Gotcha. So when you're managing those cows, you got to manage the vaccines and the disease prevention. What are some of the factors that you take into consideration?
First thing, the vaccine has to be effective. It has to work.
Yeah.
And then it comes down to availability and how it performs on the cows and everything. And then it really comes down to price.
Yeah.
And price and availability. We cannot be waiting on back orders and everything like that. We have to have things in stock when we do need to use it.
What are some of the specific diseases that you're looking to guard against with the vaccines?
With Merck Animal Health, with their Bovillus J5, which guards against mastitis, E. coli. It's just a gentle, very effective vaccine. We've used it for a while here already, for almost probably say the last year, probably almost the last 2 years. And anytime we use it, we don't see really a milk drop within it. So it just shows how gentle the Merck Bovillus J5 is on our cows.
Very cool. Taking care of those cows the best way that you can. Darren, thank you.
You're welcome. Thank you.
That is Darren Strauss, Majestic Crossing Dairies in Wisconsin.
Picture yourself driving the tractor of your dreams.
creeping up and down the rolling hills, enjoying an incredible sunset, and feeling satisfied that you were able to finally find your dream tractor at a reasonable price. Visit MachineryPete.com for the best selection of used tractors, skid steers, mowers, and more. We've revolutionized searching for equipment online. Find exactly what you're looking for quickly and easily. Your next piece of equipment is only a click away on MachineryPete.com. Visit MachineryPete.com now.
Every season, you try to raise the bar to achieve your best soybean yield ever. But frog eye leaf spot, brown spot, aerial blight, and white mold can get in your way. New Dilaro fungicide will help you fight them. Dilaro delivers unmatched preventative and curative defense against yield-robbing diseases, so your varieties will have the protection they need to help you achieve personal best yields. Keep raising the bar with Dilaro from Bayer. Always read and follow label instructions.
I'm Andrew McRae, inviting you to join me for Farming the Countryside, farmer-focused podcast. It's all about production agriculture. Farming the Countryside is available wherever you listen to your favorite podcasts and is brought to you by Nutrien Ag Solutions, the world's largest provider of crop inputs and services.
Welcome back to AgriTalk, everybody. I'm Chip Flory. Got Davis Michelson with me. Let's keep your landowner hat on here for
a
second.
Sure.
Okay?
Yeah.
Because in the conversation with Randy from Farmers National, we didn't get to it. I was going to try to, but we covered a lot of good ground there.
Yeah.
Get it?
Covered nice. A lot of well good done. Ground.
Didn't. One thing we didn't talk about is interest rates.
Mm-hmm.
You go back 6 months ago, Davis, and everybody, again, there I am with my blanket statements.
Right.
Not everybody. A lot of those watching the Treasury markets were anticipating that we were going to see higher interest rates
mm-hmm.
from the Fed in 2019. Not just one, not just two, but probably three.
Yep.
Here we are today, June 25th, and the Fed funds futures are basically saying that there's a 100% chance
mm-hmm.
that at the July FOMC meeting, we're going to come out of that with a lower Fed funds target from the Federal Reserve.
Right.
So we've gone from higher interest rates ahead
mm-hmm.
to lower interest rates ahead in a very short period of time. In my opinion, it's a very short period of time.
Yep.
Those higher interest rate calls that we were seeing,
mm-hmm.
I think were a little bit negative on land prices, and it was getting some squishiness
right.
out there in land values and even rental rates.
Yep.
But if we're going to be pulling those the interest rates lower through the second half, at least one, maybe two interest rate cuts in the second half of 2019,
mm-hmm.
I think we'll take the squishiness out of land values.
Yeah, and I like that. If there is, you know, one of the bright spots in agriculture right now really is land values because, you know, supply and demand is very balanced, at least when it comes to the higher quality grounds.
Mm-hmm.
Now, you know, Randy did mention, and we've seen this from other sources too,
sure.
the lower quality ground,
not
so much.
Right.
But the high quality ground, another interesting spot, which interest rates may have an impact on, I keep seeing increases in recreational land sales.
Oh, sure.
You know, and some even parsing off maybe the back 40 of timber.
Yeah.
And they're able to sell that off either for development or just somebody comes in and buys it just because they want to come and hunt deer and turkey on it.
Yeah.
Come camping with the kids and maybe there's a pond.
Yeah.
You know?
Recreational ground. If you'll remember, you go back to 2007, 2008, corn demand had a lot to do with this. Don't
mm-hmm.
get me wrong. But
yeah.
recreational demand for ground until we got into second half of 2008 and 2009 with the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
The demand for recreational ground was kind of helping to lift overall values. And
right.
I think it's there again.
Yep.
When you've got an unemployment level of where we're at.
Right.
And year-on-year wage growth of 3.2, 3.3%, whatever it is, something like that.
Mm-hmm.
You've got enough strength in the consumer out there that if you are on the edge of being into that recreational land buying class,
right,
you're making the move on it.
Right, right.
Yeah.
Now, you know, unfortunately, it doesn't quite fetch the same amount
no.
per acre as a piece of high quality farm ground.
But if it was
7, 8, 9, 10 grand an acre, but
if it was folded in with the farm ground that does have a decent in Iowa CSR,
right? Now you got something.
Well, yeah, yeah. Yep. It all has to fit together. Tommy Grisafi, Don Wick out in the Eastern Belt. The one thing that I kept thinking is on Friday in the Friday Farm Fuel and Fertilizer Report, we got to talk about propane.
Yes. Yes.
Because the amount of propane that we might use this fall could rival 1992. It could rival 2015, 2013 in some of these areas. And when I talk about normal propane use, okay, normal propane use would be on an index would be 100, right? You only have to go to like a 102, 103 before it starts to have a significant impact on what
on
propane prices. And I don't think a 102, 103 would on this imaginary index would stop it this year. You're talking about a 105, 107. So it's demand's going to be up this week.
Propane is extremely sensitive to demand. This is my chart from this week.
Yep.
We're down 9 cents a gallon this week on propane.
Oh, wow.
And when we talk about managing your risk, capturing savings, making hay while the sun shines.
Yep.
Propane is giving us a perfect example of that. We've dipped down. We're in line with the 3-year average now. Just this week.
Well, I'll admit, you know, I've got the propane tank out back at the house.
Yep.
I'll admit, I was a little surprised at the price that they shot us for the summer fill.
Right.
It was $119. I was pretty happy with it.
Yeah, and I've been a buyer at 120 in recent years past. I would love to get down closer to 115 if I can. I mean, heck, I'd love 110. But do we get there? I'm not sure. And I do we have time? I would love to pull up a Nat Gas chart here real quick. And of course,
well, and just the one thing: if it works for you at the price that's available to you,
there you go.
Take advantage of it. There's your Nat. What do you got there?
Yep, I got Nat Gas. It's front Nat Gas. A little higher here from the last couple of days, but definitely at the low end, we're rolling right around 227, around 230.
Yep, just under it.
It's going to be something to keep an eye on.
Yeah, no doubt about it. All right, good conversation all the way through today.
Yeah, great show.
Yeah.
We should do this like every day.
Twice a day. Speaking of twice a day, you've already heard from him once, but Pro Farmer editor Brian Grady is going to be back.
Yep.
Pro Farmer senior market analyst Jeff Wilson is going to join us as well.
The captains of cognition.
Yes. And we're going to get you ready for the reports at the end of the week. We're going to be talking about the June acreage report. We're going to be talking about the hogs and pigs report. We're going to be talking about the quarterly grain stocks report, because this has got the potential.
Well,
it's got the potential to be a trend-setting week.
I do also feel like all of these reports have the potential to be completely wrong and way off the mark.
We're going to discuss that this afternoon, too. All right, and come back tomorrow morning, because we're going to have a farmer forum with Randy from Nebraska and Brad from Minnesota right here on AgriTalk.
Is your post harvest grain protected from the ravaging effects of stored grain insects? For pennies per bushel, operators can fight insects in stored grains. Grain protectants from Central Life Sciences, such as Dicon IGR, Sentinel EC Insecticide, or Dicon IGR Plus, can help give you the long-term control of an insect growth regulator and the knockdown power of a broad-spectrum insecticide. Keep grain clean with grain protectants from Central Life Sciences. For more information, contact your local dealer or visit bugfreegrains.com.
Not in the market for a new planter, but looking to get better performance next season? Bring your trusted John Deere planter up to speed with our ExactEmerge upgrade kit. Hit the ground running without compromising singulation, population, spacing, or uniform depth. And now through July 15th, you can save 12% off the ExactEmerge and individual row hydraulic downforce upgrade kits. Visit your John Deere dealer today.
The AgriTalk podcast is brought to you by the IBM Watson Decision Platform for Agriculture, leveraging unique data, analytics, and predictive insights to help growers make more informed, confident decisions.